This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
Poem Jazz is a collaboration between poet Robert Pinsky and jazz pianist Lawrence Hobgood. They'll be performing this Friday at the Regatta Bar. Here's the first track off their new CD. They're performing it live right now in the studio. It's called Antique.
Antique. I drowned in the fire of having you. I drowned in the fire of having you. I burned in the river of not having you. We lived together for hours. We lived together for hours in a house of 1,000 rooms. And we were parted for 1,000 years.
So that's Robert Pinsky. He's a BU professor and, of course, the former three-term U.S. Poet Laureate. Lawrence Hobgood is a Grammy Award-winning pianist who's collaborated with jazz vocalist Kurt Elling, among others. And it's great to have both of you here. Thank you.
Thank you.
A pleasure.
That poem that you just started, Antique, fabulous. I drowned in the fire of having you. I burned in the river of not having you. Where's that idea come from?
It comes from two sort of crazily various sources. I was thinking partly of the kind of exaggerated and very massive blues imagery, where it seems to me something a little bit like what a blues singer might shout. It's also 16th century English poetry, where they're always burning and drowning. And there's this hyperbolic language of what love is like. So I was trying to be somewhere in between Ben Jonson and Shakespeare on one side and Bessie Smith on the other side.
That's great. It seems, Robert Pinsky, as though poetry and jazz have a natural affinity. What inspired you to integrate jazz with your poetry?
From the time I started writing poems, it was very influenced by what I had hoped I could do with the saxophone when I was a teenager and in my 20s. So poetry for me has always been mainly a matter of cadence, pitch, duration, and really all the same ingredients that there are in music. That's what's first for me.
And Lawrence Hobgood, I want to ask you, when Robert Pinsky approached you, I understand that he made it clear that he didn't want this project to just be a dramatic reading. What attracted you to the project?
First of all, reading Robert's poetry and digging into it pretty deeply was the main thing. I've had a consciousness of the importance of the sound of poetry, but I think, and I'm pretty sure Robert would agree, that the real cool place that we got to fairly quickly was one where I started grasping, and I feel like I'm continuing to grasp, that Robert's concept is musical. Robert has a musical sense of how he is reading his poems, and they come off like musical lines. And dramatic reading is just a different thing. It's
sure.
It's not really what his desire and his concept is.
I'm just curious about how the poetry and the music sort of encourage and interact with each other. I mean, I'm assuming that you start with a poem and then you're improvising the music to Robert's poem. Is that right? Do I have that
yes
right?
Yes and no. Yeah. It's more like a conversation.
Interesting.
I mean, what we did just now, exactly with Antique. And first I was listening to what Lawrence was doing. And I like to think it's more like a piano player and a horn player, that sometimes the horn player might say, let's do this, or what about something in this direction? And the piano player would say, oh, you mean like this? Well, a little bit less that or something, or the piano player might start.
So are you surprised what the music does to your poetry? I mean, you write a poem a certain way. I'm sure you hear it a certain way in your head, but then you're reading it with Lawrence's piano going, does the poem actually surprise you?
I hope so. I hope for a surprise every time. I hope there's something that makes me discover something new in the poem and in music and in poetry itself. I hope every time there's some discovery. That's the whole point.
I also feel strongly that there is a deep sense of rhythm that is symbolic of what I think of as the true nature of rhythm. Rhythm is not intended to be a purely cookie-cutter sort of a thing, but most of the music that is, especially popular music is all very rhythmically rigid. And a lot of people would hear something that we're doing and they would say, well, Lawrence is clearly in this tempo and Robert isn't reading I drowned in the fire of having you. I burned in the river of not having, you know. They say, yeah, he's not doing that, and so he's not in rhythm with Lawrence. And what I would say is, well, they don't really understand the true nature of the depth of rhythm, because if you listen to the record, there's all these places where we're totally coinciding and placing things at the same point. And that is an element that's at the heart of the interactivity of the surprise that we were talking about.
I was very influenced many years ago by Dizzy Gillespie's Paris Review interview, in which he talks about hearing more than one rhythm at once. And that's a basic step, is not to hear only one rhythm, but to hear more than one rhythm at the same time.
Right.
Well, let's hear another example of this. You're going to do Window for us, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'd love to hear that. Thank you.
Window. Our building floated heavily through the cold on shifts of steam that the raging coal-fed furnace forced from the boiler's hull. In showers of spark, the trolleys flashed careening under our cornice. My mother, my Irish mother, Mary Beamish, who came from Cork, held me to see the snowfall out the window. Windhold, she sometimes said, as if in Irish it held wind out or showed us that wind was old. My Swedish mother, my Jewish mother, windhole in Anglo-Saxon. Anglo-Saxon faces like brick, they worshipped Easter's rabbit and mistletoe that was Thor's jism where thunder struck the oak. We took their language in our mouth and chewed. Some of the consonants drove us nearly crazy because we were Chinese, or was that just the food my father brought from our restaurant downstairs in the Fells, by the Falls, the old ghetto, or New Jersey, Little Havana, or Little Russia, I forget. I forget because that baby wasn't me. The way these words are not me. Whoever she was teaching to talk, snow, she said, snow. And you opened your small brown fist and closed it and opened again to hold the reflection of torches and faces inside the window glass and through it, a cold black sheen of shapes and fires shaking. Kitchen lights, flakes that crisped and crossed other lights in lush diagonals. The snow-charmed traffic surging and pausing. Red, green, white. The motion of motes and torches that, at her word, you reached out for where you were. Where you were, it was you. That bright confusion.
Fantastic. That's poet Robert Pinsky and pianist Lawrence Hobgood performing Window. They have a new CD called Poem Jazz, and they're performing this Friday night at the Regatta Bar in Cambridge. Gentlemen, thank you. You were talking about it being a conversation, and listeners can't see you, sort of. There's visual communication going on well.
Eye contact matters, as it does with musicians. I mean, and of any kind, if you see a string quartet working together, they're looking one another in the eye all the time.
Yeah. Robert, when you were U.S. Poet Laureate, you founded the Favorite Poem Project, which I love. You've long been a sort of champion of public poetry, of democratizing the art. Is this a part of that in any way?
Of course it's a part of it. Those videos at favoritepoem.org show different people, the construction worker, Cambodian immigrant,
right,
the MD, whoever, reading a poem. And each time it's different because it's a different person reading it. You see that person's life. And in both cases, there's an emphasis on the bodily sound of what it is to say a poem. And this is completely congruent with the favorite poem idea, is that you love it, there's emotion in it, and the emotion is going to be a little bit different each time.
Mm. And Lawrence, I'm intrigued by this. You use the term accompanist, but it seems like you're really playing with Robert rather than accompanying him.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain sense in my concept of it there's a certain sense in which Robert's accompanying me.
Sure.
As well. We are accompanying.
I was just going to say that. That's the meaning of conversation.
Right, exactly.
And you're accompanying one another. And sometimes sometimes the piano's leading, sometimes the voice is leading, and that's part of the fun is that interaction, and sometimes you're not sure exactly who's leading, you know. The great times you find you go to a similar place at a similar moment. And it is though you said it, but you said it with what was happening in the rhythms and the intonations.
What's the big challenge about this process? What's the hard part? What's the hardest part about doing it?
I can only speak for myself. As I said, I studied Robert's poetry pretty deeply, and I think that if I hadn't done that, then I'd be in trouble letting go of thinking that way. So that's laying foundation. But in terms of the synchronicity of it, if I just listen to the sound of Robert's voice and don't get hung up on trying to have some sort of detached part of myself calculate meaning and things mm-hmm. like that, then somehow, miraculously, it's when I'm just purely listening in a very right brain intuitive way that's when all the little magic moments happen, you know.
In a way, that is the hardest part, is also the most satisfying part, is managing to have tell your analytic intelligence it's done its work in the past. You've studied your art. Now it's time to just do it. And so that is, in a way, it's difficult because there's a certain risk to it. You say, I know I've flown before. I'm going to flap my little arms and we're going to take off.
Well, Robert Pinsky, poet and Boston University professor, thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it. And Lawrence Hobgood, Grammy Award-winning pianist, composer, and arranger, thank you. And can I get you to play us out on something of your choosing?
How about a nice 17th century poet in a ballady way? I'll do Ben Jonson's poem, written, I think, in the early 17th or late 16th century, His Excuse for Loving.
All right.
Let it not your wonder move, lest your laughter that I love. Though I now write 50 years, I have had and have my peers. Some have loved as old again, poets though divine are men, and it isn't always face, clothes, or fortune gives the grace. But the language and the truth, with the ardor and the passion, give the lover weight and fashion. If you then would hear this story, first prepare you to be sorry that you never knew till now either whom to love or how, but be glad along with me when you learn that this is she of whose beauty it was sung, she shall make the old man young, keep the middle age at stay, and let nothing hide decay till she be the reason why all the world for love may die. Then would hear this story, first prepare you to be sorry that you never knew till now either whom to love or how, but be glad along with me when you learn that this is she of whose beauty it was sung, she shall make the old man young, keep the middle age at stay, and let nothing hide decay till she be the reason why all the world for love may die.
Robert Pinsky and Lawrence Hobgood will perform Poem Jazz at the Regatta Bar on Friday night. You can find more information on our website, radioboston.org.
That's all for today. Tomorrow, when you think of silent films, you think of the easy caricatures, the piano music, the villain with the handlebar mustache, the woman tied to the train tracks.
But there were also films that featured controversial portrayals of ministers and realistic scenes of lynchings in the South, films that were directed by African Americans.
The lesser-known history of black silent filmmakers, that's tomorrow.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.